The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujak, Vice Chancellor for University Relations and Communications.
When the United Nations General Assembly opened its annual session this past fall in New York, one of the top leaders at UW-Milwaukee was there, serving in a very special role as one of the diplomatic representatives for the United States. Dr. Joan Prince, Vice Chancellor for Global Inclusion and Engagement, was selected by President Obama for the prestigious appointment. And on this edition of UWM Today, we visit with Joan and learn more about her amazing journey. Welcome, Joan. So good to have you with us.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here. Thank you. It's wonderful to be home.
Well, and home is a place you haven't been for a while.
That's
only
true.
Because you've been serving the country. Tell us about this absolutely fabulous experience of working for the United States at the United Nations.
I still pinch myself, Tom. It's something that never gets old. I wake up every morning when I am actually in Manhattan, of course, where the United Nations is. And just make sure that it's really real. But it has been a journey since September with the opening, the wonderful opening of the 67th General Assembly of the United Nations. And as one of three public delegates that were appointed by President Obama, I have the wonderful opportunity of what I call eating and drinking for my country, which translates into diplomatic representation for the U.S. policy and statement on several global issues.
And your boss at the United Nations is the U.N. ambassador. So you are with another person who is at the front and center of the United States engagement with the world.
Absolutely. If our listeners don't quite understand, the president makes the appointments for the public delegates. And your ambassadorship, of course, is housed in the State Department. So public delegate, alternate representative are my titles, but my working title is senior advisor to the State Department. So now I have Ambassador Secretary Kerry. Before it was Madam Secretary, Secretary Clinton. But my day-to-day report is to the permanent representative, which is Ambassador Rice, Susan Rice. So when I am in Manhattan, my office is on the 11th floor of the Ronald Brown United States Mission building across the street, and Ambassador Rice is in the same building. So, yes, we have our daily contact, our daily connect, and, of course, our connections with the State Department and the White House as well.
Let's talk about what a typical day is like when you're in the UN serving as one of these official representatives.
I'm smiling because I get asked this question, and my typical day is that it will definitely be an atypical day. There are no 2 days alike, but let me try to give you a flavor of what happens when we're in full session, which is September through December, and then we go into part-time session, which is all of the committee work. So my day really would be every morning we have a briefing meeting with Ambassador Rice or her designee. We have three other permanent representatives, we like to call them perm reps for short, that assist Ambassador Rice every day, 24/7, 365 days a year. So they are permanently there. They're career employees. And we meet every morning for our briefing because then we have received our cable, what we would call an email, but cable from the State Department, which comes through a couple times, many times a day, not just a couple times a day. So we know what our issue is for that day, our general issue. I work on the General Assembly side. There's also the Security Council side, which keeps Ambassador Rice very busy. That's her first priority. So as the rep for the General Assembly side, I get up, I head to the General Assembly, and I have the distinct honor of representing the United States by sitting in the United States chair and engaging with the 192 other delegates from what we call member states, which are other nations. Part of that also entails I might be listening to their point of view, which I do often. We come together around issues, and they attempt to get me to see their side of the issue, and I do my best diplomatic version of getting them to understand and embrace the United States side of an issue. I then many times have to go up to the podium and present the United States policy statement on an issue, and I do that quite frequently. And then the rest of the day is inside of committee work, actually going to different delegations. I think I have State Department dinners down. I know exactly how they work, how they operate.
All the protocol.
It's a very busy day, a very engaging day and evening. There's no stop and start, really, to your day, because, as you know, the world doesn't operate that way. And what we end up doing is we have the best intentions of doing something through that day. Something happens throughout the world which stops us. We may have to reconvene in private session, rethink strategy, and go back to the table.
What's it like knowing that that you really are at that focal point, given the fact that you've got 190-plus representatives there? The fact of the matter is you're in New York, you're
yes.
in the United States, and as the superpower, maybe in many people's eyes, the last remaining superpower mm-hmm. in the world, the words that you present on behalf of the United States may carry more weight in the minds of a lot of folks than from some of the smaller nations.
You know, you're absolutely right. The philosophy of the United States is one state, one vote. So it does not matter the size of your country. It's one country, one vote. However, the United States is still revered as the member state, the member country that everyone wants to get their opinion in front of. They will do their best to attempt us to get to embrace it. And they still look to us for direction. So that, to me, was such an empowering presence and environment to be inside of. It is very awe-inspiring to deliver the United States policy statement. I had a conversation with someone earlier this morning at a breakfast that you don't get it. You read the statement, so you don't insert words. We present the statement for the written record. It is stamped as written. And after I speak, it has been transcribed again, and it is stamped as delivered, because our tendency might be to add the word the word and in a sentence, and it doesn't work that way. So you have to distinguish between the statement that was submitted and this for the record and how it was delivered in the record. So I do a lot of that kind of delivery in front of my 192 colleagues who are facing me, looking at me, speaking their native tongue, dressed in their native attire. It is just an inspiring environment to sit inside of and to engage to engage inside of.
Knowing that the words that you do convey may sometimes not be as well received by some as others.
True.
There are differences of opinion, and,
yes.
and some nations have a very, very different point, not only point of view, but ideology on some of these. What does that translate into in terms of the interpersonal relationships, your ability after
yes.
you say something that a person across the aisle may not want to hear, do you get along afterwards?
Absolutely. One of the things that amazed me and that I thoroughly enjoy is we look at each other as colleagues. We don't look at each other as nations, member states, that either don't like each other or we have a difference of opinion but can't sit down together to break bread. It is totally amazing, except for a very few that I will leave nameless, that you can agree to disagree on the record. You come down off that podium, they'll walk up to you and say, let's go grab something to eat, or where are you heading now? So we agree to disagree, I would say 99.9% of the time. One of the things I truly enjoy and respect is that there is an environment and a protocol that you do not, even though it has been broken once or twice, you will be sanctioned. You do not treat each other disrespectful in the assembly chamber. You deliver your statement. You may have private sidebar conversations. We have rooms on the side where we can go for quiet sidebar conversations, but we have to treat each other with respect. If you don't like what someone is saying, if you are just totally not in sync with them, the protocol is to leave the room. But you do not raise your voice. You don't scream. You don't take off your shoe anymore. And you certainly don't point fingers at individuals. It's a very respectful environment, although the aura of not agreeing and disagreement can still be there. But it's handled, I think, in a very respectful and professional manner.
You hear often about the amazing number of translations that take place during these sessions, and regularly see people with headsets on listening. Tell us about that aspect of the day. Do you is the language situation ever a barrier?
The sacred headset. I love that you asked that question. Because when I first received the call from presidential personnel and I went through what I needed to go through and decided, yes, this is a great opportunity. I'd love to do it, love to serve. The first question I said to them, and they just started laughing, was, hey, do I get to wear one of those little translator headsets? So you are absolutely right. There are many different languages and that are spoken. There we have, if I remember at last count, about 15 to 20 translations. So the headset is necessary so that there is no barrier to the translation. What we have found out is that most of the permanent representatives from all of the member states, I would say 100% of them do speak English. However, we make sure that some of the more common languages, the translation is available. And I'll tell you, it's great work opportunities for individuals to act as translators. A lot of students work, some of our international students work as translators at the United Nations. So, yes, the headsets are there. Yes, you have to use them. And most people like myself, we have purchased our own set of earplugs and headsets that we just plug in to our station where we are.
You talked earlier about the need to stay on script. And by the way, that would be a terrible job for me because I love to ad lib, and I suspect that would get us in great trouble. So I'm glad that you're doing it.
I often thought I might get us in trouble, too. I have to stay on script as well.
But it's really important. Some people may say, well, you know, what's the difference if you insert but parsing the scripts of the diplomatic world is a critical part of measuring what? Direction? Changes in direction?
Well, the translation is really the issue. It's one of the reasons why you present a written script and then it's stamped as delivered what you actually speak. Because, you know, there's something, what lost in translation is absolutely true. I have seen statements that have been translated after I have spoken from some of the different languages, and you just have to smile because the translations, A's don't always translate into A's. So the word the, particularly where it falls in the sentence, might be translated differently in a different language. So it is very important that language is preserved correctly and that people understand exactly what was submitted versus what was delivered.
You're listening to UWM Today on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. Joining us in the studio, Joan Prince. Joan is Vice Chancellor for Global Inclusion and Engagement at UW-Milwaukee, but we're talking today about an amazing experience she is enjoying this year, serving as one of the representatives for the United States at the United Nations, an appointment she received from the president last year. And we're so proud of her at UWM for carrying the UWM flag and the Milwaukee and Wisconsin flag on this international stage. Joan, as you think about the experiences that you have connecting with people from around the world, are there any particular topics or areas that you in particular have been assigned to monitor or to focus on in this year of service?
That's a great question, because I don't think people, lay people, understand exactly what agenda we work on at the United Nations. The agenda for this year's 67th General Assembly, so that's 2012 through 2013, was actually set last year. So what we will be doing starting now in January through the end of the appointment in September is we will be setting the 68th General Assembly's agenda. So when I came in this September of 2012, we had an agenda of items that we're working on. So the agenda ranges from issues such as the empowerment of women and girls, particularly around education and financial empowerment, ending violence against women and girls, child marriages, food security, water security, eliminating poverty, all of those, you know, world literacy, all of those large issues that face us in this world are on that agenda. So when I came in, they did two things. They asked me what some of my passions were, and I looked at the agenda and immediately sort of zeroed in on a couple. As you know, I have a strong health background, and as a hematologist, one of the things that I wanted to look at was world health. So I am one of the reps to the World Health Organization, one of the United States reps. Also, UNICEF, UNESCO, and UN Women are other organizations where the United States has representation. I'm traveling back to New York for the Commission on the Status of Women, which will occur starting March 4th. And I was just named part of the United States delegation to that. So there are very critical issues that face the world where the United States has to be at that table. And those are the issues that we're working on. One of the things that I love to tell this story about, I had to deliver a statement that I received, and I read my statements carefully. Sometimes I have an overnight to read them. Sometimes I have 30 seconds before I have to climb the hallowed steps to the podium top and read the U.S. statement. But this particular statement was on the ethical use of outer space. And I had to present this statement as if I was an authority on it and certainly knew what I was talking about. So hopefully I did just that, because now I'm part of a committee that's actually looking at the ethical use of outer space. But it is an interesting potpourri or gumbo of a number of topics, world topics, that not just affect individuals external from the shores of the United States, but direct impact on us here in the United States. That is the beautiful and the wonderful thing about engaging in discussion across world and global issues.
You know, so sometimes one of the raps that you hear placed or aimed at the United Nations is there's so much talking that goes on, but mm-hmm. what really gets done? And then I think of some of the byproducts of yes. the United Nations, like UNICEF, for example.
Exactly.
Great examples that out of the talk can come action, right?
Exactly. You know, I like to use the scenario of you always need to be at the table versus not being at the table. When you're not at the table, decisions are made that may impact you and you've had no voice. I do have people ask me, particularly people who aren't in favor of U.S. participation in the United Nations, why are we in there? You know, let's just take care of our own country. The United States really needs to understand that the world is our country. There is a flat border. We travel outside of the United States. Individuals travel inside of the United States. And there are individuals who will be traveling from different solar systems to the United States. So at the end of the day, we need to be at the table. We need to solve world issues, because the world issues come here to the U.S. With us. We don't have a border that is a border that keeps everyone else out. Plus, if you look at it in a much more proactive way, think of the opportunities for individuals that live in the United States, career opportunities, travel opportunities, opportunities to engage with colleagues from around the world. That's what makes this world great. That's what keeps this world safe. That's what keeps this world sound. Don't we all want clean water, fresh water, secure water? Don't we all want food, fresh food to eat? to eliminate hunger, poverty, to have educated individuals, both in the U.S. and abroad. In order to make that happen and to keep that happening, you have to have a relationship with your neighbors who are your world partners.
When you talk about how the world is shrinking and thinking about the UWM connection here, the fact that we have 30,000 students on campus, many of those students in the course of their careers are likely to spend time outside the United States. And so
yes.
The whole idea of even thinking that we can turn our back to the world and say, let's just take care of our own knitting here, belies the fact that we're looking at a world where our children are going to be truly world citizens, right?
Absolutely. Manpower, Johnson Controls, Harley-Davidson, GE, they don't just sell to an American populace. They sell around the world. They have entities around the world. So a student at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee who comes through a program may end up at General Electric in Hong Kong or Singapore or Timor Leste. You never know where they may end up. So that is the reason that the global lens has to stay at a local level, because everything is not local anymore.
Yeah. And also looking at the history of the United States, it really
yes.
is fitting that the United Nations is here, because what is the most diverse country in the world, right?
Absolutely. We're the host country.
Made up of immigrants.
Made up of immigrants. I will tell you, the opening day of each General Assembly, we call that High Level Week. It is a week, 7 to 10 days, where the head of every country, every member state, comes to New York and is allowed to speak at the podium. So you can imagine security is very tight, but more importantly, it is such a fabulous opportunity to see these world leaders in action. Brazil always speaks first as the first to sign the charter. Second is always the United States as the host country head. I can honestly tell you that there is standing room only. You need a special pass for the 20 to 25 minutes that the President of the United States speaks at the Assembly. It does not matter what your political affiliation is worldwide. They all want to hear and interact with the President of the United States. It is absolutely a fabulous opportunity.
Do you ever just pinch yourself and say, am I really here?
I do. I'll tell you, I pinched myself many times before I got there. But I will tell you when it really became real, when I was sworn in. So as I raised my hand and actually pledged to do a good job and to support my country, so help me God. And then they said, congratulations. Ambassador Rice shook my hand, and you have to sign in the Book of Delegates. And they saved a space for me right next to Shirley Temple Black. So that and Daniel Moynihan was about two lines above me. So that's when it became very real, when I really started to pinch myself and say, okay, get over being here and make sure that you do a good job and stay focused.
So as you think about this experience that you're still enjoying today, how do you think it's changing you? What will Joan Prince be like after this year of duty is done?
You know, that's an excellent question. I don't think anyone's asked me that. I think it's changing. It has changed me to look at everything that comes across my plate with a much more global lens. I take everyday issues and sort of elevate them to, is this a world crisis or not? If it isn't, you learn where to prioritize, where to put it in place. But I think more importantly, it sensitizes you to what we have in our country and what we don't have in our country, and to help me focus on making sure that I am a good bridge between the two, between what we have, what we want, and what we don't have. And how do I help make that happen? How do I have some influence on making that happen? And how do I help others see that we need to make it happen?
How easy do you think it is to communicate those possibilities to the average American, the folks who don't get a chance to be in New York and literally be face-to-face with people who are from a world away?
I always try to write what I call the average script. I need the script that the individual who works at Pick and Save can understand when I'm speaking to him, to him or her, that same script if I'm speaking to the president of a company or the president of the United States. I think my job, my role now, post the ambassadorship, certainly will be to make sure that the script is understandable by all and that it applies to all, that we keep everyone from the individual who feels as if they need more to the individual who has more, but to make sure that the script is understandable and they can see a way to connect.
You hear talk about so many problems. Certainly people get up, I'm sure, from the different countries and talk about their attributes. But
Yes. But
a lot of your day is spent focused on how to make things better.
Yes.
Is that ever depressing, or have you been able to maintain what I know is a genuinely optimistic Joan Prince?
There are some things that are very depressing, very shocking even. But I will tell you, I try to remember the goodness of the United States, the opportunities that exist here, and try to think about how you make that happen worldwide, and you allow access and provide a pathway for others to just have hope. And with that hope, try to combine skills, all of those things that I think are good connectors for us to share in the world. So you do have down moments, but there are so many more moments that are so hopeful and so great that I walk away at the end of each day feeling very good, very tired, but very ready to take it on again the next day.
Any dream or desire now to travel to places you might have never imagined going to before until this experience?
Thank goodness for Google. I have had so many of my colleagues come up to me, shake my hand, tell me where they're from, and some of these countries I had never heard before. So yes, I have had an opportunity, because I do travel for assignments, to visit places I never thought I'd get to go to. And now I have a real passion to make sure that I get to a lot of places that I haven't been that I really want to visit as well.
And how do you feel coming home after you've been to these far-flung places?
It is great to be home. And I love coming home. The good thing about leaving your home that you love is that you've always got a place in your heart to go back to. It's good to be here. It's good to make the connections for people here with the people that I have met from around the world, and to see budding partnerships, budding collaborations start to happen. It's nice to be home. I love Milwaukee.
Well, and we love having you in our home here
Thank
in Milwaukee.
You.
Joan, thanks so much, and continued good fortune and blessings as you finish your year of service to the country.
Thank you.
Joan Prince, who serves as both Vice Chancellor for Global Inclusion Engagement at UW-Milwaukee, and this year serving as one of the representatives for the United States at the United Nations. Well, that's all for this week's program. Thanks so much for joining us this week. We'll be back next week, same time. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet the faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.